Hello again. Now we'll reconvene the meeting of the Public Accounts Committee on the public hearing on the physical mitigation of Muskrat Falls Reservoir Wetlands. I want to welcome Mr. Aubrey Grover here to our meeting. Thank you again for your appearance here today. The Standing Committee on Public Accounts is dedicated to improving public administration in partnership with the Auditor General. The committee examines the administration of government policy, not the merits of it. The committee strives to achieve consensus in its decisions whenever possible, and members take a nonpartisan approach to their work on this committee. Again, from a housekeeping perspective, remind participants that this is a public meeting and their testimony will be part of the public record. Live audio will be streamed on the House of Assembly website at assembly.nl.ca, and an archive will be available following the meeting. Hansard will also be available on the House of Assembly website once it is finalized. Witnesses appearing before a standing committee of the House of Assembly are entitled to the same rights granted to members of the House of Assembly respecting parliamentary privilege. Witnesses may speak freely, and what you say in this parliamentary proceeding may not be used against you in civil proceedings. So right now, I would, before I ask the chair to administer the oath or affirmation, I would take an opportunity to introduce everybody on the Public Accounts Committee and also members of the Auditor General's Department who are here, starting with my colleague on the left.
Thank you. Jordan Brown, member for Labrador West.
Lucy Stoyles, MHA for Mount Pearl North.
Scott Reed, St. George's Humber.
Helen Conway-Ottenheimer, MHA for Harbor, Maine.
Sherry Emma Walsh, MHA for Placentia St. Mary's.
And I'm Tony Wakeham, MHA for Stephenville, Port au Port.
Sandra Russell, Deputy Auditor General.
Trina Keats, Assistant Auditor General.
Adam Martin, Audit Principal.
And now I'll ask the clerk if she would administer the oath or affirmation to the witness.
I, Aubrey Grover, do solemnly swear that the evidence that I shall give on this examination shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God.
Mr. Grover, we'll start off. Committee members will basically ask questions for about 10 minutes each. We just go around the table. But before we start, if there was any opening statement you'd like to make or anything like that, we'd be more than happy to hear from you for a couple of minutes.
No, I really have no opening statements. I'm happy to be here today to participate in your examination of this issue. I testified before the Muskrat Falls Committee in general about Indigenous matters in relation to that project. I was interviewed by the Muskrat Falls Inquiry with respect to environmental issues, but they saw fit not to examine me. The Auditor General's office did examine me for a morning on evidence related to their particular work on this matter. I was happy to cooperate in that, and I'm happy to cooperate here today and do my best to answer all your questions fully and truthfully, as I just swore to do.
Thank you. I'll start again with Mr. Brown.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Grover. In the Muskrat Falls Wetland Capping AG report, when you were asked there, that you said that the Public Accounts Committee cannot confer on the Auditor General's authority to conduct the review, which was not within the amount of statute, and that you your department at the time chose not to participate fully because you did not feel that it was within the statute to do so. Can you explain the objection from the department on to participate in this matter?
Let me be clear on that. We wanted, in every respect, to fully participate, and did. We turned over every record we had in our possession to the Auditor General. I testified for a morning and answered every question that was asked of me. And I would have come back and testified again and again and again. This was a comment that I made to the Auditor General in relation to a letter that the Auditor General had drafted and asked me to sign. And one of the concerns I raised was this was not a concern of the Department of Indigenous Affairs and Reconciliation. This was a concern that was raised by others besides myself about the authority of the Public Accounts Committee to make this particular reference under the Auditor General's Act as a matter of law to the Auditor General. We came to no conclusion on it. Everyone agreed to participate in the process. So whatever our concerns were not a formal objection. It was just noting that, given that the definition of an audit, given that this is really directed more towards the financial administration, internal controls, and payment of public funds to others, was this within the scope of what was contemplated by the Auditor General's Act? For example, I mean, one is not going to say that the Act is of such a nature that the Public Accounts Committee could order the Auditor General to investigate a private property dispute. There are limits to what the statute, like all statutes, prescribe for the authorities that are established by them or operate pursuant to them as to what they can do. But that was not, I never wrote a formal letter to the Auditor General saying, I object to your jurisdiction. I just noted it in an email to the Auditor General's office in relation to one of these certification letters. So while other people in the government had similar concerns, none of us raised it as a formal objection, and we agreed to participate. As I said, I was happy to testify. I would have testified again and again and again, because no one is more disappointed than me that wetland capping did not occur. I advocated for it, I supported it, I encouraged it, and was severely disappointed when we were informed, as a government, by NALCOR, that it couldn't occur.
Thank you so much, Mr. Grover. I appreciate that, and I'm glad. Moving on to wetland capping itself now and the essence of it. In earlier testimony, we heard about obviously the IEAC committee and that, and they were presented with two reports, one in December and the follow supplement one in March. Both those reports did have timelines that would have to be met in order to keep on schedule, especially in the March one. It mentioned that work had to commence in November. And according to the timeline that in the Auditor General's report, by November, we were still nowhere with any permitting or anything to do the work. Were you aware of these timelines, and did you raise them as a deputy minister up to cabinet that these timelines should be met, and with the response back from cabinet that their decision should be made?
With respect to the Independent Experts Advisory Committee, we were not participants. By that I mean the Office of Indigenous Affairs and Reconciliation, or the Office of Indigenous Affairs, as it was at the time. I can't remember. We've had a few changes in our organizational structure. But the Independent Experts Advisory Committee, as you're probably well aware, was composed of the three of Nunatsiavut, Innu, and Nunatulavut, and a representative for the municipalities of the area, the federal government, the provincial government, and NALCOR. So the provincial government representative on the IEAC was basically a representative, I believe, of the Department of Environment. And the Labrador Affairs Secretariat, or office at the time, provided support in some matters to the Independent Experts Advisory Committee. So they did their work. I would not have been aware of the timelines or the work. I would become aware of what they had decided when they sent in the report to government. And when they sent in the first lot of recommendations, they were all accepted and done. And then the second lot of recommendations came in. And so they needed to be processed. But the lead for processing, and as you say, providing advice to ministers and cabinets about the recommendations, and I guess any time concerns with the recommendations, that was being led by the Department of Environment. And I did participate in meetings at the request of the Department of Environment in order to formulate our advice, or the advice to the government, by that I mean the political government, the cabinet, the ministers, on the recommendations. But my advice on the recommendations was wetland capping should be done. We felt, based upon the long and arduous representations of the Nanatsiavut government on methylmercury in relation to the project, that in the totality of the circumstances, that was a reasonable thing to do. We felt there needed to be some physical mitigation, so we advocated for it. Now, as the is noted in the Auditor General's report, there was a steering committee for these projects, and generally it was deputy ministers, people from Executive Council, senior representatives of NALCOR. So when the issue of physical mitigation in terms of soil removal and wetland capping was being discussed at the committee, I was very concerned about this, because I was worried that I knew we were approaching the full impoundment of the reservoir. And so I was concerned if, when this reservoir is up to its maximum height, which is quite a height, as you probably well know being from Labrador, could wetland capping be done once the full impoundment of the reservoir was carried out? And I was told by the NALCOR officials at one of these steering committee meetings that yes, even after full impoundment, what would happen is material could be gathered up, could be placed on a barge, the barge would go out in the reservoir and, I guess, dump the material on the areas that needed to be capped. So since I was assured that wetland capping could essentially be done at any time, or I had information from the people who knew, who had the engineering expertise to address this issue, that wetland capping could be done at any time, I wasn't overly concerned about the timelines, but I was concerned enough to inquire about it. Now, I notice in the Auditor General's report there are other documents and things. I was never privy to them. So when the government made its decision that it was prepared to proceed with wetland capping, and we had the meeting that's noted, I guess, in the Auditor General's chronology in January, and we were told then by the representatives of NALCOR that wetland capping could not be carried out, I was astonished. I had no hint that there were some factors that would have inhibited wetland capping to be carried out. And as I said, as an advocate for it, I was severely disappointed to learn it, because that was the first time I realized there were some constraints on doing it. But to answer your question, sir, not all of these time sensitivities was I aware of, because Indigenous Affairs was not participating as a representative on the committee, and Environment was taking the lead with its technical knowledge of methylmercury sitting on the committee to provide the materials that needed to go to ministers and the cabinet to make a decision with respect to wetland capping.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Hi, Mr. Coburn. Thank you for coming today. And as we've heard from a number of other participants so far today, we've learned how important this project was to the government and I'm just wondering about your department working with municipal affairs, and if you were part of the communications on a regular basis when they had a meeting regarding this project, and I know we talked about the timelines. Do you feel that your department knew everything that was going on Would two departments working together?
Well, this is something that is a challenge. When you're in a department or an office or a secretariat that is small, that has really limited or no programs, and that the programs for the people that you're advocating for are all controlled by other departments. So just let me give you so I'll just use this as an illustration. An issue may come up from a particular Indigenous government and organization about policing in the province. We can make representation to the Department of Justice, but we don't control policing in the province. I'm not saying the Department of Justice does, but it's within their mandate, it's not within our mandate. So while we have the role to advocate on behalf of Indigenous people, we don't issue permits. We generally don't make statutes or regulations. We don't run programs. What do? We conduct land claim negotiations. We help with agreements and negotiations on agreements between the government of Newfoundland and Labrador, sometimes the federal government and Indigenous governments and organizations. We help departments discharge the Indigenous duty to consult on projects that affect asserted or established Indigenous rights. And we provide some advice to departments on how to better deliver their programs in a manner that's respectful, appropriate, and takes into account the unique needs and circumstances of Indigenous people. So in this case, the authorization that would have been required from the provincial government to do wetland capping, this was not an authorization that we would be issuing. So our role is to provide advice. And so when we were called upon, as I was, by the deputy minister off the Department of Environment, or Municipal and Provincial Affairs, as it was at the time, to go to meetings, provide advice, I went, I provided my advice. But I didn't correspond. I wasn't the regulator. I wasn't the entity. Indigenous Affairs wasn't responsible to issue a permit. So the interaction on the issuing of the authority, if one was needed, which apparently one was needed from the Auditor General's report, did not rest with Indigenous Affairs. It rested with the Water Division of the Department of Environment. So they were the ones that were having the interaction with NALCOR, and they were the ones that would ultimately have to issue the authority to NALCOR to conduct wetland capping. So the time sensitivities were more with the regulator than they were with us.
So you stated that you had concerns, and I'm just wondering, who would you have brought your concerns to? Would you have brought them to the Deputy Minister of Municipal Affairs, or would you have brought them to Cabinet?
No, like I said, there was a steering committee that met on a fairly regular basis, comprised of deputy ministers of the relevant departments and people from Cabinet Secretariat and NALCOR officials. I think it was all public servants and NALCOR officials. There was no ministers or elected officials involved. And as I said, following, the establishment of the Independent Experts Advisory Committee, and having had some, in fact, the thing that led to the establishment of that committee was the raising of the water in the reservoir, not up to its full impoundment, but up to a certain height. But I guess I'm not an engineer, I'm not a methyl mercury scientist, but I just know this, if there's organic material at the bottom of a pond and you want to cap it with soil or gravel or other capping materials, it's a lot easier to do if the water is shallow. So as the water was increasing, I'd be concerned about that, which led to my question at the steering committee meeting, to now Corps, can this be done after full impoundment? And I was told, yes, the material could be barged out and basically, with today's technology, I'm sure, laid right on the area that had to be, the organic material that had to be capped. I'm sure the deputy minister that was responsible for environment was invited to the meetings. Like, all relevant deputies were invited to the meetings. So I had raised my concern. Nalcor had told me. Nalcor did not come to me afterwards and say, oh, what we said at the meeting was wrong. So I knew the decision, given the significance of the decision and the importance of the project, had to be a decision that was ultimately made by the elected branch of government, the cabinet. And so I expected that cabinet would make its decision, and then after cabinet had made its decision, which in this case was to proceed with wetland capping, what Nalcor would apply for the permit or the amendment to the permit that it needed to do the wetland capping to the Department of Environment, and then that would be processed. So I didn't know that they had put in a permit even before this. So on the time sensitivities, like I said, I was delighted when the cabinet said, yes, let's do wetland capping, and then my hopes were crushed when I was told by Nalcor the time to do it had passed. So that's a long answer, but because, for example, we don't directly deliver education, we don't directly issue permits, we always have to work in cooperation with all the other departments. And like I said, I mean, you know, I thought I had the answer to the question that I needed, and at no time did anyone come to me and say, this has to be done by X date. Had I known that? That this wetland capping had to be done by X date and the government was prepared to do it, I would have done everything I could have done to make sure it was done by that date. But I was not aware there was a deadline or a constraint on the wetland capping.
So it was more of a communication issue than from what I'm hearing. Moving forward, I mean, the project is done and the whole purpose of these hearings is what can we do to improve it for the next time. What advice would you give us?
Well, you know, I've read the, this was examined by the Muskrat Falls Inquiry. Now, like I said, I didn't testify at Muskrat, on this particular aspect at Muskrat Falls, but I read what Commissioner LeBlanc had to say about it. And I read the Auditor General's report and their findings. And, you know, I guess there has to be close communication between a proponent and a regulator on the issuance of the authorizations, such that the authorizations are issued in a timely manner. So I generally have never encountered this experience before, because in my business, where Indigenous consultation is involved, so the permits cannot be issued until Indigenous consultation is completed, I often get calls from developers saying, oh, I need this permit, or I need that permit, or I need this permit. So, and the consultation is going to take this long, and that's no good to me because I can't get my project up and running by such and such a time. So the proponents are on people, regulators, government officials, to get the permits out in the time that they need to do their mine or whatever it is. So in this case, one would have thought that Nalcor would have been an environment who was going to issue this permit, would have been in close communication about the timing and when the permit needed to be issued. And if that communication wasn't there, there was a breakdown in communication. And as a result of the breakdown in communication, as we now know, the authority could not be issued or the work couldn't be done in the time frame that it could be done. So What I'm saying is normally, if you apply, say, oh, I need a quarry exploration, I need a mineral exploration permit, and you want to do your work in Labrador in particular, where there's only a certain season, you want to make sure that the people that are issuing the permit and the person that needs the permit are in cooperation to ensure that the process is completed to issue the permit in time for the work to be done. So here, that would have been the issuance of the water authority, or the permit, the water use permit, or whatever it was, and now Core Energy. Those conversations, I was not part of.
All right, thank you.
I guess I want to get a little bit of insight, maybe into the setup of the IAC and the consultation with the indigenous groups as we, as this process evolved, I guess. And so maybe could you tell me a bit about the process? Did you have any involvement in that committee? Or were you aware of things that were happening there? And also, as things were evolving, how were Indigenous governments reacting to the situation? Were they insistent that something be happening soon? You mentioned the rising of the reservoir levels. And also, I'm sort of wondering about an update in terms of where things are now. How do the indigenous groups feel now about the situation with in relation to wetland capping? And I understand that one of the Nunatsiavut two of the groups have accepted a settlement, whereas the Nunatsiavut hasn't. So I'm just wondering what's the situation in relation to those things.
Well, thank you for that question. I'll just take the last part of it first. That's kind of more straightforward and simple. So after this incident that we're talking about, this breakdown in communication, I guess, as it's been described, the decision was taken that I think the approximate cost that was anticipated to do the wetland capping was about $30 million. So when it was discovered, or we were informed, and it was decided or determined that wetland capping couldn't proceed, it was then decided, not by myself, or no, my advice wasn't really sought on it, was that we that Nalcor would take the $30 million and offer $10 million each to Nunatsiavut, Innu, and Nunatuavut. Innu took the $10 million. Nunatuavut took the $10 million. And Nunatsiavut declined the $10 million. It was no surprise to me. They had fought so long and so hard on this issue that concerned them with respect to methylmercury that it was not a surprise to me that President Lamp decided to decline the money, in the sense that what Nunatsiavut really wanted was not cash, but physical mitigation. So that's the situation on the money today, is two have taken it and one hasn't. Maybe I'll just continue on with today, and then I'll go a little bit back in the past. So after the failure of wetland capping, or as a result, or, you know, given the failure of wetland capping, one of the other recommendations of the Independent Expert Advisory Committee was methylmercury is such a concern from this reservoir, the production of methylmercury. We need something so that independent of government and that will monitor the levels of methylmercury and determine if the levels are reaching high enough that consumption advisories should be put out, or some other action should be taken, or public information should be made available. So the answer to that was, we need to form what is now called the Muskrat Falls Monitoring and Health Oversight Committee. So that was the successor to the Independent Experts Advisory Committee that was recommended by the Expert Advisory Committee. So I did have a hand in setting that up. And so to the best of my recollection, it was set up similarly to the Independent Expert Advisory Committee, which is federal government, provincial government, NALCOR, the three indigenous governments and organizations that I've mentioned, and a municipal rep. And they have an independent chairperson. And these folks have been given the responsibility to look at the monitoring results, provide advice on how to monitor, check and see if the levels are approaching areas that could be hazardous to people's health, look at the bioaccumulation of this in the ecosystem, because it's not just methylmercury in the water, it's methylmercury in fish and everything else, seals. And, you know, they have an ability to recommend that, you know, public consumption advisories be put out or public education be put out. And I'm happy to say that the three indigenous governments and organizations are all represented on that committee. And that committee is up and running and working. And I have, from my role in helping to establish it, every confidence given the people that are on it and their interests on it, that should there be any need to take any actions with respect to methylmercury levels, that the committee will see that those actions are taken and advocate to the government and recommend to the government that actions be taken to deal with methylmercury. And it was very important to me that the three indigenous governments be on it, in particular Nunatsiavut, who had fought the longest and hardest in relation to this issue, that they were on it. I would say one other thing in relation to the projects and the indigenous peoples of Labrador, which is Innu, from the beginning, were always pretty content because they had their three conditions met for the project, which was an impact and benefit agreement, the Upper Churchill Redress Agreement, and a land claim agreement in principle. Nunatuluvut fought long and hard during the consultations on the during the EA of the project to have an impact and benefit agreement. They never got an impact and benefit agreement until the Ball administration, and towards the middle latter part of the Ball administration, there was a community development agreement entered in between NALCOR Energy and the Nunatuluvut Community Council, which I'm not saying made all their grievances from the way the project went forward in their point of view whole, but at least they had something. So Innu had their things that they wanted. Nunatuluvut eventually got a community development agreement. Nunatsiavut still really, their main interest was methylmercury, and so their participation on the committee today is a means to so they can participate and be informed and have their concerns and interests with respect to methylmercury addressed. So on the consultations during the EA and on consultations on permits after the EA, there were consultations with not only the Labrador groups, but with seven Quebec Indigenous organizations that have land claims assertions in Labrador. So there was consultation on the entire EA procedure, on the joint review panel report, and then the projects needed over 4,100 permits, provincial permits, and there was a process for consultation with the three Labrador groups and the others on all those. So, like there were a lot of concerns expressed by Nunatulvet and by Nunatsivit, which are detailed out in the LeBlanc inquiry. That was the part I did testify with respect to. And so where people are to today, I have a sense that, you know, the project is built and people have a greater comfort or less anxiety with respect to the project. But as I say now, we look to the committee and the monitoring results to help us ensure that there's no adverse health effects on any individual that happens to be downstream of the project. Again, I know that, you know, it's been a long project in the making, so there's a lot of things, but let's just say, in general, anyone doing business in Labrador has to be aware that in 2004, the Supreme Court of Canada changed government actions throughout this country. Anywhere there were land claims, what the Supreme Court of Canada said, if government, be that the federal or provincial government, is contemplating taking an action that could adversely affect the asserted or established rights of Indigenous people, consultation must precede the action, or must precede the EA release, the permit, or the authority. So throughout the Muskrat Falls projects, there was engagement with the three Indigenous groups in Quebec and seven Indigenous organizations in, three Indigenous governments and organizations in Labrador and seven Indigenous governments and organizations in Quebec.
Okay, thank you.
Heimer here. Hello, Mr. Gover. The first question I'd like to ask, you gave evidence just a few minutes ago that so you weren't aware of the timelines and you were very concerned that there would be approaching a full impoundment of the reservoir. And your advice had been that wetland capping should be done. And you advocated for it. Is that correct summary of your evidence?
Absolutely. I thought it should be done. I advocated for it. I supported it. I was happy the government decided to do it. I was concerned about how the rising waters in the reservoir may affect the ability to do wetland capping. I asked about it, and I was told it could be done after full impoundment.
Okay.
That is correct.
Yes, thank you. And so you were aware of the urgency of this matter. So I ask the question, you had indicated that you did raise your concerns in the steering committee meeting, and you were basically assured that this could be done, and you were satisfied with that those assurances that were given.
Yes.
So after that, was that the only action that you took? Was raising it with the steering committee? Was there anything else that you would have done after that when as time was progressing?
Not necessarily, because there were actions after that.
Okay.
But after that, the actions would have been, as I said, we have to provide the government advice. By this I mean we have to provide the government advice. By that I mean the Department of Environment was leading the initiative to provide the government advice. So obviously we were called together, and since the Indigenous interests were so pronounced, I was participating in providing the advice. So I would go to meetings where the IEAC recommendations were laid out. We would have presentations and PowerPoints prepared by the Department of Environment on the issues, and I would provide my input. And my input would always be, I would like to see wetland capping done. But as I said earlier, the interaction between, let's say, Nalcor Energy, the proponent, and the regulator, being the Department of Environment, was their interaction. So the material that was passing before them, unless that came to my attention at the committee, I wouldn't have been aware of any time sensitivities. And to the under oath here, to the best of my recollection, in my discussions at these meetings where we were preparing the advice, vetting the advice that would go to government, I was not apprised that there was a time sensitivity.
So, if I may say, you know, that seems to me that there's perhaps a deficiency there. And would you have any recommendations so that going forward, for example, someone, you know, like you in that position would have perhaps had more influence or, you know, been able to change the course of how things occurred? Because we know that wetland capping, you were very severely disappointed. You indicated that it did not occur. So, you know, just going forward, what recommendations or what is it that, what lessons have we learned could avoid this in the future?
I did say, like, you know, obviously good communications between proponents and regulators is essential. But there's another thing here, which I'm not sure entirely why it happened. So, as I said, there were 4,100 provincial permits required for the projects. And as I said, and as you would be aware, given your legal background, in 2004, the duty to consult came into being. So we as a government couldn't issue relevant permits in Labrador without doing the consultation. So our practice and procedure is that whenever a project is released from EA, we do a set of guidelines which says, this is how the Indigenous consultation will be carried out for provincial permits. And in this case, after the Lower Churchill projects were released from environmental assessment, there were such guidelines. And we had discussed them with Nalcor Energy. And to the best of my recollection, the way the guidelines work is, whenever Nalcor put in an application for a permit, they would simultaneously send it to the regulators, and send it to all Indigenous governments and organizations, and that would start the clock ticking on the Indigenous consultation. In this particular case, for this particular amendment to the permit, which apparently was submitted, our office was not sent the copy of the permit. And as a result, I don't believe, and nor do I believe, any Indigenous government and organization was sent a copy of that permit. In fact, it was only the result of the Auditor General's review that we discovered that we had no copy of the application to amend the permit to allow for wetland capping. So Nalcor, or I don't know why that happened, but my understanding is to trigger the consultation process, the permit had to go out to the Indigenous groups at a minimum, but also it had to go to the regulator, and it had to go to us. And my understanding was that's what Nalcor did, and in 4,100 permits, this is about the only case where I could see that it didn't happen. Why? I'm not sure.
Okay, thank you. So the permit, I just want to be clear, the permit was, you know, required to go to Indigenous groups as well as your department, and for some reason you did not receive a copy, and you're not sure of why that happened. Do you have any ideas of possibly why? Was it an oversight?
I don't know, because we designed the guidelines and we did them in consultation with Nalcor. We've done this various ways. So sometimes we have guidelines where the proponent sends in their permit to the department and then the department sends it out to Indigenous groups. But in this particular case, I remember we had the conversation with NALCOR, that NALCOR said, look, we want to make sure the timeline commences. So we don't want to send it into an official in some department, and it might lie around on a desk for a couple of weeks, and then it gets sent out, we've lost a couple of weeks. So we want to trigger consultation by sending out the permit. And that's what the guidelines provided. NALCOR sent out the permit, that triggered the consultation. So all I can say is, I don't know why it didn't conform to the guidelines once they put in their application for the permit. But I guess from reading the LeBlanc inquiry and the Auditor General's report, I guess a decision was made in the Department of Environment to put the permit on hold, to put the application on hold. And I guess unbeknownst to us, that stopped the process.
Okay, so you
now I will say this. Mm-hmm. I do agree that the decision on wetland capping could not be made by any official. So it had to be in the sense of whether or not the permit was, the application for the amendment to the permit was actually approved or not, could only be followed, that could only be done, issued to NALCOR after Cabinet had made the decision or after the Premier had made a decision or after ministers had made a decision. It had to be a political decision. So I understood, like, while it couldn't be actioned, in the process of actioning it, we could have circulated it to the Indigenous governments and organizations and say, what do you think of that? Because I presume, I haven't even seen it to this day. I presume NALCOR laid out a plan to do it and how they were going to do it. And that would have been of interest to the Indigenous governments and organizations. They might have had some thoughts as to how it should be done, when it should be done, this, that, or the other things. I don't know. These are the things they would tell us in consultation. But because of the hold, this is another reason why I wasn't as involved in it as I might have been. Because once consultation begins and Indigenous governments and organizations start to send in their comments and their views, then that's when we all get together and say, well, what do you think of that? And how could we address that? Because the duty to, you know, the consultation requires any reasonable comments that are made or concerns raised by an Indigenous government and organization, we should fully, fairly, and consider them as the Crown, as the provincial government, and try to accommodate them. But I had no representations from departments, NALCOR, or Indigenous governments and organizations about the permit application to proceed with wetland capping. So all I can say is, I don't know, but my speculation is that there was a decision to put the permit on hold until Cabinet made its decision, and that brought the whole process to a halt.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Gorman. Thank you.
I just got a couple of questions for clarity, that's all. So I'm just wondering, were the three leaders reaching out to you, relaying concerns to you, asking you to discuss the wet capping with the Deputy Minister of Municipal Affairs? And what about the Executive Council? Were the three leaders putting any pressure on you, or, you know, trying to ask you as their advocate to discuss this with Municipal Affairs, Environment, and, of course, with the Executive Council, Cabinet Secretariat? Was there anything like that?
As far as discussions with, you know, we are an entity of Executive Council, but, you know, I guess really when you're talking about Executive Council, you're really more like Cabinet Secretariat, the Premier's Office, yes, things like that. So the vehicle for discussion, I guess, amongst, those entities was the Steering Committee. And so there were fairly frequent steering committee meetings. Now, not every steering committee meeting discussed the EAC recommendations, but I guess periodically they were discussed. Certainly, like, there tended to be an update on how Indigenous people felt about the project. I mean, because we had a number, Indigenous people had a number of concerns about the project from its, you know, beginning to its end, or, well, we're still ongoing with it. But, you know, that was the vehicle, but, you know, all I can say is I've worked now with the Indigenous people of the province for 20 years. I was going to do everything I could to make sure their interests were addressed. And so whenever I had the opportunity to advocate for that, I advocated for that. I didn't feel, in the sense, I didn't feel pressure not to advocate, not to speak my truth, not to try to represent the truth as they saw it. It's, like I said, I was concerned about this issue. I supported this issue. I wanted this issue to proceed. And I guess the only people that in the province that might have been more disappointed than me and that it didn't proceed were the Indigenous people that wanted this to proceed. But, you know, I didn't feel any pressure not to do it or not to advocate for it or delay it or frustrate it. And I don't think any of the findings have ever said that there was any, you know, intention to defeat wetland capping. It was just a failure of communications and processes to make sure that it happened. And, you know, that's regrettable. And, you know, certainly some of the things we've spoken about here today, better communications and improvement in the processing, would have probably headed this off. I will say, in the course of this, I had pretty good relationships with senior officials at NALCOR, and I just wish, as I said earlier, I remember at times people in NALCOR would phone me and say, we need such and such a permit. Can we, you know, see what we can do on the Indigenous Consultation Fund, because we need this in a certain amount of time. And of course, you know, in the interest of the public interest of the projects and Indigenous people, I try to balance out those interests and move it along. But no one called me from NALCOR and said, you know what, we need this wetland capping by the state. Because I can assure you, if anyone had called me and said that to me, I would have moved everybody that I could move to get it done by that date. So, I don't know, but yes, there should be good communications. Our office is always open to Indigenous people, or proponents, or people who have interests. Anybody can call, and they can call me at any time, like I said. And I did have calls, but I had no call or representations with respect to the timeline on this. And so, there it is. You know, so I guess to the extent that I can be, you know, held accountable and responsible for its failure, in disgrace, I accept that responsibility. But I tried in honor to see that it occurred.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I just have a few more questions to follow up. And passion you have for the Indigenous populations in our province comes through loud and clear in your testimony, and we certainly know that, having dealt with you in a number of different files. And the only thing I'm troubled by is in your statement you said you were told by somebody that wetland capping could be done after flooding. Who told you that?
So to the best of my recollection, I mean, I'm not here to criticize
Nope.
or condemn anybody. And I have the greatest of respect for my colleagues and all the people that I work with, and all the premiers and ministers that I've worked with, including all the, whether they were liberal or conservative, I found all the premiers and ministers I work with to have a passion for Indigenous peoples.
Yes.
And all the people at NALCOR. Anyway, to the best of my recollection, when I asked that question, I looked the person that when it came to the project, I had respect for and confidence in, about his knowledge and understanding of the most intimate details of it, and that would have been Vice President Gil Bennett.
And the reason I ask that is because at the same time as that was being said, Nalcor on at least three occasions in August communicated with Municipal Affairs and Environment about the urgency of getting this permit approved and the need to get on with the capping. At the same time, in the summer of 2018, there were numerous parties, including Nalcor, the three indigenous governments, and the chair of the IEAC, who all contacted Municipal Affairs and Environment with concerns about time and the timing for implementation of the recommendations. So clearly, concerns were being raised by the indigenous groups, by Nalcor, that this project needed to proceed, this approval needed to be dealt with. But those concerns were not relayed through your department.
No, I appreciate what you say, sir. And I read the, you know, having read the LeBlanc report on this, and having read the Auditor General's report, I was not aware that all these representations were being made.
Yeah. And then, in your reporting relationship as Deputy Minister, who do you report to?
Well, at that time, when wetland capping was in process, I would have reported directly to the Premier. He was my minister. The Premier assumed the responsibility, right. Premier Ball, former Premier Ball, assumed the responsibility for Labrador Affairs and Indigenous Affairs and maybe even Intergovernmental Affairs directly, right. As, you know, the Premier's prerogative. Obviously, before Premier Ball came in, under the Conservatives, there were ministers. So, I, at times in my career, I've reported directly to the Premier. At times, I've reported to ministers and premiers. The premiers tend to be very interested in Indigenous issues, so there's an overlap between reporting to the minister and reporting to the Premier. But on this particular matter, the wetland capping, my minister was the Premier.
Right. And the reason I ask that, because the Premier was the person who originally implemented and gave the idea of forming this committee, independent committee to review. And so he instigated that. So as the Premier of the province who started this, and now you're a deputy minister responsible for Indigenous affairs directly underneath him as the minister, did he express any concern to you about the timelines regarding wetland capping?
No, I can't say that we had. Well, the answer to that question is no, because the Premier appoints the deputies, appoints the executive. My ultimate loyalty has to be to faithfully and fully, to the best of my ability, serve the people of the province, including the Indigenous people, through the ministers I answer to. And so if that had been raised with me, I would have investigated it, dug it up, provided the best possible advice I could on it. Like I said, I detailed before my testimony under oath before the Auditor General the same sort of facts I'm saying to you here today under oath, which is I asked the question, I had an answer, I wasn't that concerned about it because I had that answer. Then the decision was made, and then I discovered it cannot be done. Had anybody, at any time, when this was critical, come to me and said, what can we do about the timelines, or what do you think about the timelines? Well, obviously, since I was so enthusiastic about having the wetland capping done, I would have done what I could. I mean, I get calls all the time about smaller matters of less consequence. Like I said, we need to get this project. You know, we need a process to do consultation on this project. Or proponents come into the province and they say, oh, we're going to Labrador. We really don't know much about Labrador. How do we handle Indigenous people in Labrador? So I try to do my best on even the smallest of questions. So had anyone raised anything about this time sensitivity, like I said, it was my duty to advocate for the Indigenous people of the province. And if I was aware that there was a critical factor in this, a time, I would have done what I could to make sure the time was met. Because I couldn't dictate the government's decision. The government's decision on the IEAC recommendations was the government's decision. But certainly, I would have, in my duty, had to provide all the information for the government to make a decision within a time frame that the work could be done. But I was not aware that we were under such a time crunch.
So on August 29th, when the Municipal Affairs and Environment briefed the Premier on the status of monitoring and the analysis of methyl mercury, you weren't invited to that meeting?
Was I invited to the meeting?
Yeah.
Not to the best of my recollection.
Okay. So again, the Premier of the province, you are his deputy, responsible for Indigenous affairs, very passionate deputy, and at the same time as a decision is being made, a very important decision about wetland capping, a very controversial issue, which you testified earlier that the three levels of government were concerned about it at the time and stuff, that the Premier of the province did not consult with his deputy minister responsible for that department?
In a sense that, not directly, in the sense that the material that was going to the Premier to advise him with respect to this issue, I had my input on. But I can't recollect the meeting. I can't recollect being at the briefing, no. But obviously there are records which would say whether I was there or not. Well, all I can recollect is, here's my input on the materials that are going to be used to brief the Premier or ministers or cabinet, and there it was.
So let me ask you this question then. Of all of the material that you were copied on that went to the Premier's office concerning wetland capping and the idea of timelines and the necessity to move with this project, you were never copied on anything that alluded to the urgency to get this wetland capping done.
Absolutely not, because as I said, I was off the understanding and belief that after the government had made its decision to do wetland capping, and we had this meeting, it's detailed out in the Auditor General's chronology as to when it occurred, but sometime in January, we were at the steering committee meeting, and it was said, now government's made it, and the Alcor representatives were there. And it was said government made its decision to proceed with wetland capping, and the NALCOR officials said, well, that can't be done now. I was like flabbergasted. Okay.
Thank you. Did you have a follow-up question?
I do. Two.
Thank you there. In late October 2018, the Deputy Minister of MAE, and Minister Parsons met with the special advisor to the Premier, who we determined was Mr. Sams, to discuss a draft letter to NALCOR about this permitting. Were you aware of any of that prior? Were you copying any of us?
Sir, I can't say that I was.
Okay. In November 5th of 2018, there was a meeting with the Lower Churchill Committee, and NALCOR was not invited due to an invitation error. And it was discussed about this topic. Were you part of that committee, or were you aware of those committee meetings?
If there was a steering committee meeting, like the steering committee that was set up with NALCOR and the deputies,
yeah.
I believe I was, to the best of my recollection, I was invited to all of them, and I never missed any.
Okay, so you were at the meeting of November 5th when NALCOR was not invited to the steering committee meeting.
I didn't send out the invitations, but if there was a steering committee meeting on the 5th, all I can say is I assume I was there. I would, like I said, as far as I know, I was invited to every meeting of the steering committee.
Okay.
And I attended every meeting of the steering committee. I believe in the Auditor General's report, when I was reading it, there was the November meeting, but then I think there was a previous meeting in June the 4th or something like that. I was just trying to piece together the meeting at which I actually asked about the wetland capping. And I was trying to go back and thinking about the steering committee meetings. It might have been the June meeting, but I'll say this, that, you know, yes, I was, as far as I know, I was invited to all steering committee meetings, and I attended all steering committee meetings. So if it was a meeting in November, I would have to say, I would think I was at it, yes.
Had you had any conversations with the special advisor to the Premier, Mr. Sams, or Mr. Greg Mercer on any of the wetland capping stuff or anything through the Premier's office?
I had no conversation, to the best of my recollection, with Mr. Sams. And with Mr. Mercer, to the best of my recollection, I had no conversation with him. My input into this issue was, as I said, all my input was as a public servant, participating with my colleagues and other public servants in providing materials to go to advise the government as to the actions it could consider in relation to this. So, to the best of my recollection, I had no conversation with Mr. Sams or Mr. Mercer about any of this matter.
Thank you. Did you ever meet with Mr. Ken Reimer to discuss anything to do with the report that came out of IEAC report and discuss anything with the wetland capping with him and his findings?
No.
No. All right, perfect, thank you. One last question there. Given everything that went on with it, and obviously the failure to launch when it came to actually doing any physical mitigation, do you feel that, like, the spirit of the October 25th, 26th meeting in 2016, do you feel the spirit of that meeting has not been met, and that we've probably done some permanent harm with our relationship with Indigenous people by failure to do the wetland capping?
My only answer to that has to be yes, because that meeting established the Independent Expert Advisory Committee, and they provided us with the recommendations. And the government decided wetland capping should be done. So the committee had recommended it. The government said, yes, let's do it. And then it didn't occur. How could that not impair our relationships with Indigenous governments and organizations, in particular the Nanatsiavut government, who had fought so long and done their own research on this issue, did their own studies? So then it was like, how do we make amends? Like, what can we do afterwards? I mean, I don't think anyone thought that the inability to proceed with wetland capping did not harm our relationships with the Nanatsiavut government in particular. So all I can say is that, you know, from my point of view, having not proceeded with wetland capping, what was the government's effort to try to assure people, Indigenous and otherwise, who live in the Lake Melville area, that methylmercury will not be a health risk for them? And the thing that I see was the establishment of this committee with the three Indigenous governments and organizations on it, and the municipal representative, and expertise from federal and provincial governments, to have someone who would not be part of government look at all the results and then be an ability, in and with an independent chair, have an ability to speak on these issues. So if I was living in, if I was a Nunatsiavut beneficiary living in Rigolet today, how, do, after the failure of wetland capping, the completion of impoundment, the history of these reservoirs, and the production of methylmercury as we found out worldwide, how would I say today, how do I know when I eat that seal, or when I eat that goose, or when I eat that partridge, or when I consume that fish, that I'm not going to put myself at risk? And the only way I know, apart from the government's efforts, is that there's this independent group of people that are looking at it, including people that represent me, the Nunatsiavut government, as a Nunatsiavut beneficiary. I shouldn't be saying me, I mean, I'm not a beneficiary. I'm not even Indigenous. But for people in Cartwright, or for people in Rigolet, or for people in Happy Valley Goose Bay, Northwest River, Mud Lake, how did, it's not just Indigenous people. No. How do you know that, like, this is safe? Yeah. And I guess you're sort of like, apart from the government's actions in relation to this, whatever the government might want to do, is if you're in Happy Valley Goose Bay and you're not Indigenous, there is a municipal representative to represent the interests of Happy Valley Goose Bay, Northwest River, Mud Lake, Sheshashe, Cartwright, and Rigolet. So that's, given that wetland capping didn't occur, I'm not a scientist, so I can't say how much that increased the risk of methylmercury. But presumably, if the capping had been done, the risk of methylmercury would have been reduced to some degree. So that didn't happen. Perfect. So now, did that make relationships better? I would say no. But the government did set up this independent committee to provide some degree of assurance. And knowing the people on it, as I said earlier, I have every confidence in them to protect, to make sure health is not adversely affected by any unpredicted increase in methylmercury.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Gover, for your testimony today. Before we leave, I ask again the Auditor General if they would like to say anything about the testimony that was provided.
No, I have nothing further.
Okay. Well, again, thank you, Mr. Gover, for taking the time to come here today. We really appreciate it. And we'll take just a couple of minutes now in order to get ready for our next witness. Thank you again.
Thank you, sir. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. Good afternoon again. We'll reconvene now the public hearing by the Public Accounts Committee on the physical mitigation of Muskrat Falls Reservoir Wetlands. And I want to thank Ms. Erin Shea for coming to be with us today and perhaps answer a few questions that committee members might have. Before I do that, I will get the committee members to introduce themselves to you and also members of the Auditor General's Department, starting with my left again.
Jordan Brown, I'm the member for Labrador West.
Lucy Stoyles, I'm the member for Mount Pearl North.
Scott Reed, MHA for St. George's Humber.
Helen Conway-Ottenheimer, MHA for Harbor Maine.
Sherry Gavin Walsh, MHA for Placentia St. Mary's.
And I'm Tony Wakeham, I'm the MHA for Stephenville Port au Port. Welcome. And now I'd ask the AG's department.
Sandra Russell, Deputy Auditor General.
Trina Keats, Assistant Auditor General.
Adam Martin, Audit Principal.
Thank you. Before we continue on with the swearing-in piece of this, I will read out a statement to you. The Standing Committee on Public Accounts is dedicated to improving public administration in partnership with the Auditor General. The committee examines the administration of government policy, not the merits of it. The committee strives to achieve consensus in its decisions whenever possible, and members take a nonpartisan approach to their work on this committee. Again, remind the participants that this is a public meeting and their testimony will be part of the public record. Live audio will be streamed on the House of Assembly website at assembly.nl.ca, and an archive will be available following the meeting. Answered will also be available on the House of Assembly website once it is finalized. Witnesses appearing before a standing committee of the House of Assembly are entitled to the same rights granted to members of the House of Assembly respecting parliamentary privilege. Witnesses may speak freely, and what you say in this parliamentary proceeding may not be used against you in civil proceedings. So now I would ask the clerk if she would administer the oath or affirmation to you.
I, Aaron Shea, do solemnly, sincerely, and truly affirm and declare that the evidence that I shall give on this examination shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Thank you, Ms. Shea. And before we get started, normally what we do is each committee member will be allocated 10 minutes. They can ask a bunch of questions. There may be some that will answer some, ask questions, some may not. But that's usually how we work it. But before we do that, we always like our invited guests to say if they would like to make any opening remarks or comments to us before we start.
I just wanted to let you know that when I did first get this file for methylmercury, it was in 2015, and that was in the Department of Health at the time. It was considered an issue by that department, and I have also been in several other departments, natural resources, environment and conservation. I didn't always have control over the communications of the issues, but I certainly was there for a lot of it.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much. I'll start with Ms. Gammon, also on my right.
Okay. So, Aaron, were you working as a director of communications from September 22nd, 2017 to January 9th, 2019 in the Department of Environment?
Municipal Affairs and Environment.
Municipal Affairs and Environment.
Well, that was formed in February, so yes.
So as the director of communications while you were in Municipal and Environment, did you see any official written requests from NALCOR?
As far as requests from NALCOR would go, I probably wouldn't receive anything like that. Being the communications director, I would generally receive, their plans, what messaging they wanted to use. You know, it sort of wouldn't come to me before the decision.
No, I'm more or less asking if you were in meetings or executive meetings or whatnot, that there were communications from NALCOR at those meetings.
Yes.
Did you see any communications regarding the permit amendment?
At that time, no.
Did you work closely with the executive team in municipal affairs and environment?
Yes.
Okay. Were there a lot of meetings in the department pertaining to Muskrat Falls from September 2017 to January 2019?
Can you repeat that?
Were there a lot of meetings in the department pertaining to Muskrat Falls? And
yes, I would say we did meet a lot about it.
Okay.
And when I said we didn't receive anything about the permitting, I didn't see that. I did know about it. I just didn't see the actual amended permit request.
Okay. So what do you remember about the permit request, the one of July 25th, 2018, where NALCOR submits a permit amendment to request MAE to perform wetland capping? What's your knowledge of that particular permit?
I did know that this was an idea of NALCOR's, that this is how they wanted to cap the wetlands. But I was fully aware that it was a government decision, So I wouldn't have looked at it as though Nalcor was, say, going to get their way, going to, you know, just do whatever they felt like. And I was aware that they had previous permits for, you know, lots of permits for Muskrat Falls. I just assumed that, of course, they would need permitting for what they were asking for now.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. So I'm sure you, like I said, you as aware, like they said, Nalcor put out a communication plan that was circulated to MAE, and then it was put on hold the day after. Are you aware of who quashed that or suspended that, and any rationale on why it was done like that?
No, I don't know who. I just knew that it was put on hold when I received it from Karen. She's a communications person, Karen O'Neill, at Nalcor. When I received it, actually, you know what? Now that I think of it, it was her who sent me an email and said they were holding it.
Could you repeat the name of the individual again, please?
Karen O'Neill.
And have you had a previous work with Karen O'Neill prior to this?
Yes, since I started the file, she was always at Nalcor.
Has she sent over any other communication plans or anything like that prior to this one here that's being mentioned?
Yes, she would probably send them over if they were about, I mean, I'm talking about other things, but for example, the North Spur, when they wanted to communicate something about that, they would often send, you know, they sent over the communications plan for when they were going to lower the boom, when they're going to flood the reservoir, and but they would send them to Natural Resources, currently IED, and I wouldn't necessarily have to receive them because as the regulator, it's nice for me to know what they're going to say, but it's better for Natural Resources to know.
Okay, excellent. No, thank you so much for that. So, did you find it odd that they sent over this communication plan and pulled it the next day? Did you find that, see anything odd about that or not a normal kind of procedure?
I heard rumblings about this fish habitat compensation plan, and I didn't really know anything about it because, you know, to me that's sort of right down in water resources territory, but I did know about it, and to be honest, I sort of just assumed that they had changed their plan or that it was now going to involve the compensation plan. I don't recall it being mentioned before that time.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Amy Ottenheimer here, Ms. Shea. Just wondering, to ask you about, so on July the 23rd, 2018, we've been told that Nalcor submitted the communications plan to your department on the intent of wetland capping as part of the fish habitat compensation plan work, right?
It was in that, was it?
Pardon?
The fish compensation plan was in that.
Apparently, yes. Okay. That's the information we have.
Oh, I don't think you're wrong. It's probably me not knowing which one it was in.
Well, I was just going to ask you, can you expand upon that? What do you remember? What is your recollection of that communication plan, which basically talked about the intent of wetland capping?
Yes, I remember when I received it thinking, oh, you know, you guys are really jumping the gun here. Like, you don't even have approval to go ahead and do this. You don't have the permitting for the other one, so you're gonna slip around the side and use the permit for that you already have. That's what I thought. And now I'm not an expert in permitting, but that is just what I thought. And when they pulled it back, I thought maybe somebody had said to them, "Look, you know, it can't be done this way," or something like that.
Okay. One other thing we've heard, Ms. Shea, throughout the testimonies today is that, for example, we heard from Mr. Chippett, who had indicated that, you know, communication seems to be, you know, was a big issue, probably the biggest lesson to be learned from all of this. So it seems like, and we've heard from other other witnesses today who've talked about, you know, the breakdown in communication with respect to what happened here in terms of wetland capping not occurring. So would that, do you have any comment on that? Is that your belief as well on what happened here?
I think that doesn't necessarily refer to the kind of communications that I would do as the communications director. That doesn't you know, preclude me from being involved and doing the other kind of communications. But I think it's no secret that there was an issue, communication between us and NALCOR, meaning MAE and NALCOR for sure. Even though I got along great with Karen, there is always with NALCOR. There is no trust there. So that's from my point of view. So, you know, I'm always kind of watching my back. It's not that I don't trust them, it's Karen or a specific person. It's I never know what they're going to do. I kind of sit and wait and see. Try not to pass judgment. Obviously, to me, the crux of the whole thing is we, as a government, did not communicate with the indigenous groups properly. That's just my opinion, and I could be wrong, but I do think that they were asking for to be communicated to, and I'm not talking about MAE. I'm talking Indigenous Affairs, Natural Resources, MAE for sure. NALCOR, you know, there was, but, you know, when you're going back, when you're talking about the communications, you kind of have to go back and see why was the communication so bad. And part of it is the relationship between the entities, not just like between the departments. I mean, us, MAE and Natural Resources would be sort of almost like representative. Natural Resources would be the representative of the business owner, and we would be the regulator. So we'd have to create some kind of a space there. NALCOR had a long storied history of, you know, of they did testing on the hair samples for the methylmercury. They had been up and back many, many, many times. They had spoken to some of the groups about, well, the North Spur and the other types of things that go along with the Muskrat Falls project. So, yeah, I think my main thing is that, and I know you guys are looking to improve the government, that's why you're here. And I really hope that, you know, there's been a lot of suffering because of the AG report, because of the breakdown in relationships due to, and I can't say it's due to methylmercury, but it definitely precipitated something. And I think that if you can fix it, that's what you have to fix. The communications with the indigenous groups over the Muskrat Falls, and I mean, it's still ongoing, so who knows, but I think that if we had properly in 2016 and 2015 had properly engaged them, there's a likelihood that they wouldn't have got to the point where they had to have that big blowout all-nighter in 2016, and I think things could have been different from there. But, you know, this is conjecture on my part.
Well, thank you. We appreciate your candor as well. And the previous witness, Mr. Gover, had indicated too as well that, you know, consultation with Indigenous groups, you know, certainly lacking. And in particular with respect to the permit, the amendment permit, that in terms of a communication, I guess this would have been a communication issue, that the permit should have gone to, you know, the application permit should have gone to Indigenous groups and to his department, and that it was the only time that he could see that this did not happen in the history of applications, permit applications. And that would have had the objective of triggering consultation. So I think that that is what you're getting at now when you're talking about that lack of engagement with, in particular, with our Indigenous peoples.
Yeah, not specific to the permit, the capping and the amendment. Like, I'm going to be really honest. To me, the capping is, you know, it led to a big problem, but it is not a big problem. It was going to get us 2% mitigation up there, and we know now there was barely any change to the actual amount of methylmercury that was created. So, you know, like, just going back in time, I don't want to say that, I don't want to blow the permitting and application out of proportion, because to me, you know, in a project that's not done, in a, you know, where we've spent $14 billion, this, in my world, is like so small that it almost doesn't, like, you know, it warrants apologies and talking, sitting down, discovering what, you know, what could we have done better. But I think, like, the hullabaloo over the whole thing is, you know, you took something that was just, you know, methylmercury is a big thing because it could affect people's health drastically. Thank God there's none up there. But, you know, to worry about the 2% and then it didn't get done, and that still ended up being a great thing that it didn't get done. I know that by laying blame, we can move forward and figure out what went wrong, but I gotta say, I don't think it's big enough for this kind of, you know, reaction, overreaction.
So is it safe to say your concern is primarily with the suffering, as you described, the suffering that has gone on in repairing the relationships that have been damaged as a result of this?
Yes, I think, you know, like, and I'm not just talking, like, about the people in MAE. I mean, the people in NALCOR, they're not faceless. They are, you know, a lot of them are really trying hard to get this thing done, and they take their responsibility very seriously. And I think that, and natural resources, the same thing. Natural resources, they only wanted to sort of be a conveyor between us, MAE, and NALCOR. And, you know, Indigenous Affairs has that actual role of kind of trying to get everybody to talk and be a support. So, you know, I think, I just feel like all the finger pointing kind of is just, it's losing the actual point of the whole thing is getting lost. And that's that we could have been better in communicating. But, you know, it's like you've used a hammer to on a toothpick. This is what how I feel. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Michelle.
July 23rd, 2018, when the communication plan that NALCOR submitted to Municipal Affairs and Environment on the intent of wetland capping, that communication plan, I think I heard you say, would have come to you from Neil. Who would you have forwarded that on to?
I would forward that to Jamie and Martin. And, you know, if it had had more about permitting in it, I might have considered putting Hossein in there as well.
You would not have forwarded it on to any other government department or anything like that, though?
No. In the way it's done is Nalcor, Karen, or, you know, they've got a bunch of communications people. Karen could have sent it. She would have to send it to either Natural Resources and MAE or separately. But first Natural Resources, because Natural Resources, it is their responsibility to bring it up to the Premier's office, the communications branch. Because it's something that the business wanted to do, it wasn't a regulator thing, it wouldn't be my place to send on the communications plan at all, no.
But it's your belief that it would have been, there was nobody CC'd on it other than a direct email or whoever it was sent?
Yeah, just within my department.
Yes. Yeah, so there was no copying of anybody on the original email. We'd have to go back to Nalcor to find out if they actually had sent another copy of that draft to Natural Resources, as you suggest.
In that case, they copied me, or they put us both in the two line. So Diana Quintin was the communications director in Natural Resources, and I was in MAE. And she sent them both to us at the same time. So I just kind of, you know, sent it to my people. And honestly, I remember thinking, like, still remember sort of looking at the fish compensation habitat plan and being like, you guys, you're pulling a fast one on us. But, you know, of course, later it came to be obvious that it was more serious. And they did send another one to replace it in August that didn't really mention the IEAC.
Right.
So.
As the Director of Communications, you would have been privy, you would have sat in on all of the executive briefings?
Most of them, yeah.
With the minister as well in attendance? So in your recollection in terms of the agendas for these meetings, in terms of wetland capping and timeliness of it and the importance of getting it done before a certain date, do you recall any of those agenda items being at the meeting? Were you present for any discussions on any of those, quote, potential communications that were coming in from Nalcor around the need to get this done sooner than later?
I want to say no, because I don't recall it on any agendas. I mean, you must remember, we didn't know that it was too late. You know, it was going to be too late. In my mind, I didn't really think of it having a timeline problem. And, you know, we didn't feel we were pressed for time. We knew, of course, that it had to be done before impoundment. It was going to be in July. But, you know, we were as surprised as anybody, I think, when Gilbert Bennett came back and said it wasn't going to be possible, because we had always thought it would be possible. Now, I know that the AG felt like that was kind of like us relying on a risky maneuver or something. But that wasn't how we saw it at all. We really did believe that it was possible to do it afterward, and that was a viable solution. So I mean, we must have spoken about it in meetings, but I don't recall anything very specific to it. And I do think it's because the wetland capping was the smallest thing. It was the 2%. The soil removal was the big ticket item, and it was to be combined with the capping. So, you know, to look at the capping by itself we wouldn't have really done that, in my opinion. You know, I mean, we would have. Obviously, we're considering the permit, but I mean, I wasn't there when we were considering the permit, and I figured that was Hossein's territory with the permit, because, yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much. Any other questions from anyone?
No.
Again, thank you for taking the time to come and meet with us today, as we have in the past. I don't know if the Auditor General has any further comments they'd like to make.
No, I have nothing to add.
We normally give our witnesses an opportunity for a closing statement. If you have anything else you'd like to say, feel free.
Okay, just let me think. I want to say that I started out and told you how long I've been doing this methylmercury file, and I've seen it really impact people, as I'm sure you can understand when I was speaking. I wish I could say when it's going to stop, because so this happened 4 years ago. So for the past, 3 years, every maybe 4 or 5, 6 months, everybody comes back asking for information. And, you know, I don't mind looking it up, but it can be very upsetting, especially after going through the Muskrat Falls inquiry, which, by the way, the politicians sat at the inquiry and pretty much said, what happened. So I was very surprised when it went to the AG. And I also didn't realize that it causes a report, and it's almost like this is like a runaway train for me. I'm like, oh, my God, you're back. Okay, no problem. I'll look it up again. But I just want to say that I really think the money that goes into the lawyers for looking at this stuff and whatever, you know, that, as you know, could be better spent on healthcare and education and all blah, blah, blah. I just want to let you know, I think that we're done with it. It got to be done, man.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. I thought you guys were going to be a lot longer.
Okay, so we'll conclude our meeting for today and recess until 10 a.m. tomorrow. Thank you.